Oh. You're live on my Facebook and YouTube, my Twitch. For some reason, there's an issue right now. So we won't be live there right now, but we'll take care of that later. But we are on Facebook and YouTube, and we have Posy Mesic again on the show. We're glad to have you back on the show. And you're excited because on the 25th, which is like 2 days from now, your Universe album comes out, right?
Yes.
And so we have a little bit of a preview, a little snippet we've set up. It's very short, but it's preview for the record. And so we're going to go play that, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about the new album, which we are going to include the link to it in this episode. So when we publish, people can go check it out on the pre-order and set themselves up for it. Here we go. We're going to play the Universe debut album trailer, and we're going to get into that right now. Hold on. So in that preview, is that are those multiple clips from videos that are going to be on the album?
So this album is actually a collection of dreams, and those clips are the memories from my dreams. And because it is, I feel that I don't know where, you know, those songs actually, I feel like I've been channeling them kind of through that ethereal space to here. Then I also wanted to give people and you the opportunity to actually get inside those dreams and try to bring back those dreams in the form of a interactive website where you can go and slide through those dreams. For each song, there's a dream, and you can, yeah, it's an interactive website experience where you can actually get inside this world, this universe. That's, yeah. There's a lot of hidden things there besides music, so it's kind of like a multi-dimensional music and video and dream opening experience. So that's gonna be out there on Friday.
Oh, that's cool. But I guess have you created multiple videos for the project, and that was like taking a snip of each one, or is that all part of one video?
So basically, they are not full music videos, but they are the memories. Okay,
they put together for the trailer.
Yeah, because exactly, yeah. But they're, you know, just a couple of selected ones there, but more on the website.
So as part of this album, did you film a bunch of dreams to be part of the overall project?
Yeah, all the videos are my dreams because, you know, in the morning, you don't remember the whole thing. You just remember some specific moments that are sometimes really short. I think also the time fragment in dreams is totally, you know, it's different than in reality. Then yeah, so I try to bring those little moments in and try to loop them, because then people can actually look like rather pay more attention of the short and meaningful clip than just be distracted by so much going on. And so it's kind of like a meditation, you know, the more you look, the more you see, and the more meaning you find, you know.
So when I'm looking at the album, and it feels like a real concept record, because you have an intro and you have an outro. And so like in the history of concept albums, you go back to like Tommy, and they had that kind of structure, had like intros and outros, they had like intermission type sections, and had like it was a whole like story. And so your dream album, you know, it has the intro, has the outro, maybe talk about like how those are related, maybe like the beginning and the end. Are they somewhat related musically, or are they really different?
So they are related. I mean, you know, all this issue, it's nice that you mentioned that storyline, because actually, let's say, you know, I've been making this album, or the journey of this album has been really long compared to normally, you know, how fast things are done nowadays. It has been actually like 7 or 8 years. And where I've been dreaming those dreams and writing down those songs, and I'm always been trying to see like what's the connection between those songs and why those songs that came to me, like why did they come to me, and where's the link in between. And so I finally actually, I think I know finally why, and I tried to bring the most meaningful ones and choose them into this album. So it's actually, and the intro, you know, starts, I cannot tell too much, but it's a total spoiler. Yeah, but basically, you know, the moments before you fall asleep, and you might be, let's say like 8 years ago, I was a girl with big dreams. And also, let's say this album was, I think, the biggest dream in my life ever. I think I can truly say that. And then you wake up, and doesn't matter how many years later, and you just open your eyes and see that this dream has actually come true. So it's the whole album is that it is the collection of the dreams, but it also signifies like a long process from the dream to making the dream happen. So, you know, time is really abstract, you know, simple.
Yeah.
So you cannot kind of, you know, one dream can be as long as 8 years. One dream can be forever, you know?
Well, it's interesting because sometimes dreams are like, you know, more like fantasy, that they never get close to reality. Mm-hmm. This whole project, you know, it was a dream, and then you made it happen because it's physically going to exist. So that in itself is a little different than dreams. That people can dream, a lot of times they're aspirational dreams. They want to make something happen, and it did take you 8 years. So mm-hmm. at some points between like 8 years ago when you first started thinking about it, it might have seemed like, well, maybe this isn't going to happen right away, or it takes time for it to be realized, but you actually, you know, made it happen.
I think, you know, I think like if something's meant to come to this world, then probably it just doesn't let you go, and you kind of like, you know, just have to do. And those, and this dream, maybe it's all for the sake of that dream, you know, maybe it's not actually related to me, but the dream just wanted or needed me to, you know, pull those songs out. I kind of like to see it that way. So also, you know, why this dream come to me, you know? Like in a way, to be a musician, it's not an easy path. It's not an easy path of life, you know? It's not a cozy path of life. It's a lot of, it's a choice, or not a choice, actually, you know? I think, you know, there's just, I think this dream just wanted to release me through myself. And, and also it feels, you know, a lot of musicians say that they feel empty that after, you know, releasing an album.
Yeah.
It's
like when you're at the end of a show, right? I think a lot of times if you're a touring musician and you get these big crowds, there's a really big come down, right?
Yeah.
Like you might be pretty, you know, hyped up for a couple hours. But then, like, into the next day, if there's no show, then it's, like, a big downer, right? And then you're like, okay, I was, like, there's, like, 10,000 people or 5,000, whatever. And you were really excited and you did all this, but then everything kind of drops.
You know, the moment.
Yeah, and it's all gone. It's, like, all the excitement's gone. And you kind of put all your energy into it. And then you're, like, you know, you might have. You know, you get older like me, like you pulled a muscle, you hurt your back or something. you're like, oh wow, I put a lot into that. And now my body's kind of giving out on me. But like when I get on stage, I don't feel it, right? But then when you get off the stage, like, oh, maybe I shouldn't have done that. Maybe I should have jumped off the piano.
But I think that there's some kind of magic, you know, when it's kind of like the spirit like possesses you. So all that you are, like as a, you know, your physical being or your age, you know, whatever those things that like define us, they just kind of like disappear. It's kind of this like music spirit comes and like, I want to manifest myself. And like, you know, this is all that matters, you know, and it gives you the strength and power. But yeah, like, you know, those moments when you like wipe up your makeup and take your clothes, you know, like your performing clothes, and then and next morning you wake up with this like little bit of glitter on your face and you're like, oh, who was that?
Well, I think it's also like there's like the whole thing of like, you know, preparing for a show, right? A lot of times, like musicians, we might have to travel, we might be on a plane, you might be on a bus, right? You got to set up, and you might take like 6 or 8 hours to get to do like an hour show, right?
Yeah.
So you took all this time to do this 1 hour, and then that all that time setting up for it. Some musicians, you know, it doesn't bother them, but some musicians, they can't, you know, I've read stories about, they get so anxious about it, right? They get so, it's like a torturous thing. Like up until the time they're on the stage, they're not having a good time. They're not really happy until they get on the stage, and then they're on the stage for like an hour or two, but then they're off the stage more time than they're on. And the happiest point is like when they're on, and then it kind of drops down. So there's like a downer before and a downer after. You're living for that moment where you can be on the shining, you know, spotlight and you got all this energy coming from like the muse, right? I think a lot of musicians take energy, like the poets say, would come from the muse. It comes from the like outside of you, or the other you, right? That you channel, your stage persona channels all that stuff, right? And then you become that actualized person. And then it's only for moments. You know, unless you're going to be like a character actor, you know, like somebody who's a method actor and then stay in character all day. Like Bowie used to stay in Ziggy Stardust. Like when he was doing it, he'd stay in character even when he got off the stage. He found that actually was not a good thing. It actually was a bad thing. but some musicians, like I guess to keep that going, like Bowie decided to stay as Ziggy even when he was off the stage.
I mean, you know, he even died. His death was also a piece of art, actually. So I think, I think what I find also, like, in myself is that, you know, the artist, it's not a job that, like, starts or ends at some point. It just kind of always try to, you know, like, because that's true. This, you know, we talk about like there's so much of this depression because of those things that you mentioned, you know, like people, you know, in the beginning are super exciting, right? But then it's just, you know, to be stuck in a bus and, you know, like take like planes all day long and everything. But I think that's where the real art like starts, you know, like that's where you need to use the most creativity to actually keep the life interesting and like, you know, to not get bored or frustrated. I think it's an art to live also, and art to enjoy the whole lifestyle, you know, because, and also remind always what I tell myself, that, you know, this was your dream and, you know, this is what you wanted and this is what you got, and like, enjoy. Enjoy the fucking hell out of this, you know?
Yeah, I think people get so, you know, into what's wrong, and they forget, you know, it's really a privilege to me as a musician, like, you know, to be a musician that you can spend a lot of your time creating art, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's a real privilege to be able to take the time that I can do that. I think the time that any artist can spend, you know, perfecting their art and being able to, you know, to work on it and actually do it and then bring it to an audience. And then that's their dream. You know, as an artist, like your dream, you know, is to build universe. You know, you spent like 8 years building it, and it's like part of you. It is like, it's you know, art, you know, musicians, we kind of take it personal, because I mean, I would think if you spend so much time on this, that you're going to take it personal because it's part of you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, the universe, if you go to the site and if you see that whole concept, it ends up, you know, finding out or who I am now. And I feel that thanks to this search through that medium, I know I have the feeling that, you know, I probably originate from some other like galaxy or star system, but like this, the place where, you know, the Earth is so beautiful and the human experience is so rough and so so grounding, and this, you know, it's so weird also, and sometimes it just doesn't make any sense, but this is somewhere where I really have to be at this moment, and like that's this experience that I'm given. And even though it doesn't feel like 100% home, it feels like a great, like great trip, you know. It feels like a great great destination to be at this point. But you know, this all actually, my view of the world, it's actually been reached through those, you know, looking and really like remembering my dreams and the messages that have come to me through songs, you know, that the album, you know, I was also really impatient. I thought that after like 8 years ago that it's gonna take just 1 year and I'm gonna come out on my debut, you know, like when I'm 19 or 18, you know, but then the album also was supposed to be called differently. The album was really much searching meanings in the nature, you know, I was in the nature girl. Then it went through this crazy process and everything was about like colors and way and too much of everything. Then it went to, you know, so it has been looking for this, basically the essence of myself or life or existence, like through all the earthly things, until it kind of ended up there where it is actually. And I feel that, you know, this is the right. So the concept wasn't there from the beginning, but you know, sometimes you just feel that's it. Like, this is what I was looking for. It's like this Heureka moment. And yeah. then you're like, now it is time. Like, I now I'm gonna release it.
I think, like, if you think about music, it's like, to me, it's like a sound painting or like, you know, like a audio novel. And so mm-hmm. when you're an artist, right? Some authors, they can write like a big novel really fast, like a Stephen King, you write thousands of pages.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And then other novels are kind of like, it takes a long time. You know, mm-hmm. they might take years for it to flush out to what they want it to be. You have to, you know, you get, I think when you're working on music, right, you can have this thing like, I like to do. Like stream of consciousness, and I do all kinds of just recording like every day, putting down hours and stuff, and then I go back and listen to it. And then sometimes what I'll find is like, okay, I find a common theme. And if I, you know, I go over worth like a year's worth of tapes, I might then put together like a concept out where I found similar things. I say, oh, these all fit together. And I read like Frank Zappa, one of my heroes. He used to do that. He used to tape like everything. He used to do his live his studio, and he would sit down in his living room with all these reels of tape and go on his recorders and then splice things together and actually find out all the work he'd been doing for months, like the theme. And then he would he'd build these like concepts. And that's all of his stuff is like concept. And it was because he would like find all these disparate tapes, but then find the common thing in them.
I can really feel the same kind of the process. It's basically the same, you know. And then you also don't feel bad of like, you know, because, you know, within 8 years, you just write like tons of songs, you know. But and then you also feel that, you know, some things that didn't make it to the album, you know, like, and you throw, you know, you put a lot of songs also into a drawer. And also there's one song, for example, that I threw out the really last moment because I just felt that it's not the right time and place for that, you know, yet here. And it just feel that's right and didn't feel bad about those songs that didn't make it because it just feel that
maybe they belong on a different project. Like when you work that long on something, you have so much material.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it, like you had like bands like that took forever to do something, like mm-hmm. like they're like not to get into it, but I mean not I'm a big fan, but Guns N' Roses is like Chinese Democracy. It took them like 8 years to, like a very long time to put it out from the last album they did, and they just kept on going over. And I think after they released it, you know, then you know they started to put out a little bit more material. And you know, and creep it out. But the thing is, I think once you have like your big project, and you have all the pieces that made it, then you might find. Do you find that you have a lot of material that you could go into like separate ideas, separate projects from that, where you just start all over again, and not use any of that?
Yeah. I mean, like this is the thing about big projects that they somehow feel so important. You're just, you know, like, you know, not, you're just picking up out the finest.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes so much, you know, energy, just not, maybe not to create songs, but actually make everything, you know, fit together when all the components are like in balance. And, you know, I was really doubting after, you know, because pretty much this album has been done alone. And I had amazing help with my friend musicians from all around the world playing, but you know, production wise and recording wise and you know, like decision wise, it was almost like, let's say 100% of like decisions, years of decisions, and right. And you know, but one thing I'm really happy about, that's not also not for granted, that I still enjoy the record. After, like, to listen to it, I can, you know, can still play it on my walls.
Yeah, I think that's a big mark. Like, and if you, when I go back and listen to something, right, I might have been really like, oh, this is the top, right?
Yeah.
And then, like, 3 weeks later, I write something so much better. I'm like, I'm not even dealing with that, right? But the problem I found is sometimes, like, what I still do is I throw stuff onto my SoundCloud just mm-hmm. to see what my fans are going to do, right? And I might not publish it to my Spotify or anywhere else. I just put it there, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes songs I thought that weren't that good, right? My fans suddenly like, boom, they love it.
Uh-huh.
So then I was like, wow, so that I got to be careful thinking like what I think is the best
mm-hmm.
when I have a certain like fan base that likes what I do. And so sometimes it's, have you ever had a hard decision, or you really know what you want your fans to hear, like, or would you let them decide what they like, or would you say, well, you know, I have this standard and I know what I want, I don't want them to hear this? Or would you ever say, well, maybe they could hear it, I don't know?
You know, it was interesting because it wasn't never a question for me. I mean, I started out, actually my first songs were like purely ambient, and they got pretty many hundred thousands of place, and you know, and if I had, you know, done what maybe people kind of expected, or you know, to kind of feed this feed upon, like, or create upon what people want, then probably maybe, you know, I would be like, you know, who knows how many fans I would have, or maybe nothing would be changed, you know. But let's say that, you know, like financially, or any business person would say that this is like, you know, you should, you know, if you find that path is working, you should kind of keep on going.
Yeah. But record companies will take your one song and then try to make you do 100 versions of the one song that did good.
No way. No fucking way. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I understand.
But
that.
You know, it's just I mean, like, you know, for me, it's just, I think it just feels also where you are with your life. I think if you're 17, then definitely, and if your, you know, first music pieces happen to be successful, then it would be kind of sad if you would just stop exploring.
Yeah.
I mean, it would have been sad for me.
The problem with the industry is, like, you know, you get one song in the top 10, and then you get all the music people go around telling all the songwriters, oh, clone this new Drake song, clone this new Beyonce song. and you see them, they're going out sending pitches to all these songwriters. Can you please clone this, clone this, clone this? And then what you end up getting on the radio is a bunch of clones of the same stuff.
Yeah.
And it seems to work like for the popular side of the chart. But I've always been the type of person, I probably listen to the bottom 200, of the chart. Because I find that that's where the interesting work is. I find it indie, independent, do-it-yourself artist. When I go read like Spin magazine or I read Rolling Stone or I read New York Times a music review, and I find like new bands. And that's what I do with the show. All I do is look for new bands.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm trying to find something different. And I don't need to just talk to people in the top 10 because there's other people talking to them. But I want to talk to the people who are actually trying to do something different, like yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really important because, I think if you have already sense of your identity and did you have something you need to give, then why to give it, but there are people who are really, really good at, replicating, and that's also a talent, so, yeah. Let them take this, yeah, I mean, this
is a place for it.
Yeah, this is their, this is their game. I mean, my game is more,
dream music, which is really vital. I like the idea, in your write-up that you're talking about, that you thought your home was far away, like you said, you thought you were living from somewhere else, that you were coming from some ethereal space. And that's interesting because, I always bring up Bowie, but Bowie tried to act like he was, well, he didn't. Bowie came out as David Jones, dressed up like a Beatle, didn't have his Ziggy look, didn't have his Aladdin Sane look.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't work. Then when he said, I'm Ziggy Stardust, I'm from this other, I'm, from the spiders of Mars, I'm a group of band and we're from Mars. He basically came out and said, I just created this idea. We're not even from here. We're like cosmic rockers. We don't even live on the earth. And that was this whole thing in the 70s where people say, oh, wow, that sounds like a cool idea, but it's I think that's really creative when you think that you put that kind of frame on something, because people today are so into beat focused music or they're into things that are just so catchy and things that are so short. Right. That I just don't see how you put your record on a Spotify playlist that's geared toward that type of audience. Your record is more like what I would listen to from a band like Genesis or Yes or Pink Floyd or, something more like Taj Mahal or Sun Ra. I mean, it's more in that space. It's a headier space.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a heavier space because it actually demands... It demands at the same time a lot and really little from the listeners. I mean, it actually just demands, because it's really genre diverse. Let's say there are pop songs. There are at the same time really alternative or experimental alternative sounding songs. There are ballads. There are some songs that sound a bit maybe childish,
What's the poppiest song on the record?
I think the poppiest song probably also what kind of pop?
Well, I guess what would you think would be the radio single that a DJ would listen to his record and pick the song that would be the one he'd spin?
Play freaking dance, yeah. But it has it, yeah. But it has its own twist also. So it's let's say it's a. How to put it, a normal DJ, because there's no, the theme is not normal,
I'm just saying, I guess if you were thinking about somebody who's trying to push a top 10, top 20 hit, beat focused, if you look in the top 20 today, everything's kind of beat focused, everything's hook focused. So what's the most beat focused, hook focused song that
fits
the way things are today?
Then Freaking Dance and Paradise, both of them.
Which song do you think would be the least likely to be played on the radio?
Wow, that's a great question. Maybe Länderfirmars. Because yeah, it's
what does that word mean? Because I don't think everybody knows it, what it means.
It doesn't have a, you know, it has a meaning for me, it has a meaning for you, it has meaning for, it's a symbol. It's a symbol. It doesn't have a, but it's not the common symbol. It's a really personal symbol of something that's, this kind of, it's also, you know, dreams are different. There are different kinds of dreams. You know, some dreams that you want to reach, and some dreams are that, you know, you rather want them to stay dreams. Mm-hmm. Well, that's kind of like a stronger kind of dream that, you know, really, you know, like the journey, let's say, like, yeah, okay, I'm going to explain visually. So if there's a big, big forest full of all kinds of animals who want to eat you, and the ravens who want to make you mute and deaf, and, you know, there's this beautiful, beautiful soul that you want to reach, then, and there's no way other way than through this forest, then this is Länderfirmars, that kind of dream or spirit or voice or calling that makes you cross through the darkest and hardest path to actually reach it. The dream maybe that everybody else is saying that it's impossible, and so until you don't become self-aware, it is impossible. But at some point when you really start listening around, and even the ravens are around, and they are trying to tell you something, even though their voice is maybe not super beautiful, but they are trying to tell you something. Yeah, sure. And if you actually listen to them and make it, you know, and take a meaning out of this, then you become stronger, and you can actually, you know, cross all kinds of obstacles.
Well, I think the idea of Mars is like so aspirational now, because we're living in a time where people are like, well, that may happen. Like, we may actually be able to get to Mars and build a colony, right? Or we might. It seems like it's technically possible, and there are people willing to do it, and there are people like working toward it. Where, like, in the 50s or the 60s, it was still like science fiction. It was like, well, that's not gonna happen, right? And now we're living in a time where people are like, Elon Musk and SpaceX, they're gonna do that, right? The Chinese, they're working on doing that, they're gonna do it, right? The Russians are doing it, and so it's actually technically possible in the next 20, 30 years that it's gonna happen. And so, you know, the struggle to do it is probably gonna be, you know, things that happened on the way toward it that people didn't anticipate. But I think that's like, everybody has like goals in life. And like when you think about like Mars or Saturn, and, you know, you take these space concepts, and in science fiction, it's always been like aspirational. Like, we're gonna have these robots, you know, that are like thinking, you know, that's been in like Isaac Asimov or Ray Bradbury forever. And now we actually have a world where that exists. And we're like, oh, wow. So the science fiction sometimes becomes science fact, and aspirational things that happen. So the idea that you're talking about in your dreams, like, your dream was to make the album, and now the album's coming out on the 25th. So it proves that dreams can actually happen.
Yeah. I mean, it's also kind of interesting, because at the same time, the album has a lot of spacey and let's say new age and those cyber concepts a bit, and at the same time, the point of the album also, and what I really want to, I feel that my purpose is to actually make people maintain this humanity, like the inner children, the joy, the things that are making us human, you know, because the more the robots are going to become part of our society, I think the less we actually have the need to be human and face those human challenges that actually let us know who we are. So I'm kind of really feel that I'm the knight of this, you know, inner truth and children, child being and joy of life.
You kind of got that. Celebrate. The 60s kind of inspired, like, flower powered, right? Anytime you say something like that, that feels like 1966 or 67, right?
It feels,
so this is the 21st century, and you've got flower powered.
Yeah.
So that's like an old hippie kind of concept.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, there's in today's world, there's still people who live to the hippie aesthetic, you know.
They
still see it, you know, and I see it in your art because the way your art is kind of, it's trippy and psychedelic. Well, maybe it's not trying to be that, but it's like it seems to be inspired from that time period in a modern way. And so, flower powered, how would you describe what that's about?
You know, I think it's nice that you mentioned that hippie concept, because I think that, you know, actually the hippie concept has been kept alive, like throughout all these times. But now, for some reason, the hippie concept age limit is like below 5 or 6 years old. And then you need to stop being hippie, and then you need to become a serious person suddenly, or maybe, you know, then the world is trying to, you know, make you like shape you better, which is also, you know, it's growing up. But the concept, basically, flower power, the song is talking about when things are too nice and beautiful, and when, like the lyrics say, when days are too sunny, the beautiful flowers will just dry if you are not aware that the beautiful sunlight also, it's not enough. If there's a lot of happiness, you still need to nurture the happiness in order to keep those flowers alive, because otherwise the same happiness can also kill the flowers. So there's actually pretty, you know, pretty like deep meaning inside it. It's also kind of like fighting maybe the hippie concept, and, you know, maybe the true care, you know, if you love everybody, then the meaning of love actually disappears, you know, it doesn't weigh much anymore. And if
love has to be like a special thing, you know, be more distinct, because if you have the same feeling for everybody, like how could you love everybody?
Exactly. And also, you know, if you're always happy, and even if you're sad, you're still happy, you know, and smiling, and, you know, kind of like ignoring the part of life that, you know, life is a journey of learning through pain and beauty and everything, you know, and you should just nurture yourself and others, like just, you know, be real and this pretty like heavy concept. It also talks about how all the world, like all a lot of how the media is trying to like feed our subconsciousness with all kinds of information that's maybe not serving us that much, but it's still our choice to either, you know, pay attention to it or not. Like that, you know, this is our work that we have to do. It's not, you know, we cannot blame this media or our people to ruining us. I mean, it's our job to also take care of ourselves and to the people closest to us. So I mean, it's just the song about care, and in the true care, not fake care, but true care that takes energy and that takes a lot, but gives also a lot.
I think it's interesting because when you look at the album, and you have like Paradise, Amazon, then Flower Power. And mm-hmm. and if you think about those three songs, I can kind of imagine like flowers in paradise, flowers in Amazon, and then flower powered. So it's like a trio of songs that have this kind of like, at least is a sound pain to me. Just even the name inspires. If I think about paradise, I'm going to think about like plant life, like, and flowers are probably going to be in paradise. If you think about the Amazon, nice. Plant life, flowers are going to be there. And then you have flower powered. So This is like looking at those three songs together. It seems like, okay, well, this is where there's a lot of beauty in this section of the record.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about. And then it goes into Freaking Dance. So then something changed because you're not talking about flowers anymore. Mm-hmm. And then it goes to Cards, and then it goes into something really jarring where you have the song Slut. And it's like, okay, well, we had Amazon, Flower Powered, Freaking Dance, Cards. And then we have this, like, wow. So can maybe you talk about because I don't want to give away the whole record, but it seems like something changed there in the direction.
Yeah, I mean, I think the record is appreciating the beauty and the joy, as well as celebrating the darkness. I mean, it's just, you know, those songs like Cards is a really a mysterious song about how I actually got into, let's say, it was the first time when I experienced to magic in order to actually hear some messages from the tarot card reader that in my dream. Yeah, exactly. So basically Cards, I wrote the song and then my friend gifted me a tarot card reading a week later. And then the tarot reader sent me back the report, and the report included the lyrics of my song in many of her words. They're exactly the same. Wow. So if this happens, then you just, and during this period,
you go with what happened, because like what happened, you experienced like a magic.
Yeah, oh, totally. And I really, it was that, you know, it's always you want to kind of find magic and try to, you know, make things magical. You see this like little sun drop and you're like, oh, that's magic. And truly it is. But, and then you watch Harry Potter and then it's magic and it's cool. But okay, when this thing happens to you really, and you haven't actually like chosen
magic, actual magic.
Yeah. The actual magic, then things get pretty, thing, it changes your life in a way, the way you start, the way you start looking at everything.
You have like these, like, you know, these like 6 degrees of separation type things, or you have deja vu things where something exactly that you had in a dream actually happened.
Oh yeah.
Right. And it happens like word for word, action for action. You have a premonition of it and then it actually happens.
Or yeah.
Somebody actually, you know, tells you something that you're like, it was on your mind. They say exactly what you were saying. And you're like, what?
Yeah. You know?
So yeah, I think that, you know, being, I'm part like Cherokee Indian. So there's a lot of mysticism in Blackfoot as well. And there's a lot of mysticism in Native American indigenous culture.
Oh yeah.
Like a lot of stuff that wasn't written down, but it's like passed down, all these like stories. And it's all about like connection between the planet and animals and nature and all these mystical things that you should like listen to. Like if the wind is doing something, you should listen to it, right? If a hawk flies over you and then the wind is blowing and the sun's going like that, you actually should listen to what the world is telling you, right?
Yeah.
But if people in the modern world look at it, it's like, oh, I'm not going to pay attention to that. That's just like random, right? So they think that you shouldn't, you know, look at it. It's like all science-based. Oh, you can't pay attention to that. But yeah, there's a lot of things that are more mystical.
Yeah, I mean, it's so interesting how, you know, I think all the natural processes that are happening around us are happening inside us as well. And if people listen more, then they actually learn to know themselves and accept themselves also, you know, much better. Like, yes, because sometimes, you know, there are so many people lost and they have no idea where to look for the answers, but actually the answers are, you know, it's just the listening skill that maybe needs to be more developed, because yeah, truly, like the answers are being whispered to us all the time, like, you know, in this world single
like all the time. But I think people drown it out because they're, you know, they got their headphones on or their phone, or they're thinking about some kind of problem at work or problem in the relationship. And so they're so caught up in like these very narrow things that they don't pay attention to the overall world that is talking to you all the time. And it's like, if you don't, it's like you have an inner kind of feeling. I think people have an inner like self. The Victorian poetry was talking about, they look in the looking glass, you see this other you. But sometimes that other you is telling you something and you don't listen to it.
Right? Yeah.
And it really is trying to tell you to like listen to your, like, you know, your inner voice. And then you choose to ignore it and act like you didn't hear it.
Yeah.
I think that's in the modern world. A lot of people like choose to ignore their inner voice until it kind of builds up and then you can't ignore it.
Yeah. Like for me, it just doesn't, I can't do this because I have like physical, like I feel it physically in my body. so I don't have a choice. So I'm happy about it, actually.
Well, I think it's good to be in tune. I think a creative person is always in tune with that muse, right? You talk about this ethereal space, right? You talk about like the music that came from this other place. And that's the muse, you know, that's what Victorian poets would call the muse. You know, modern people talk about the ether, which is this idea that there's some stuff in the air.
Yeah,
this nature of the world, right? And you can pick up on it. And you can pick up more spiritual people talking about the stuff coming out of the cosmos with the stars and space and astrology and overall mysticism. There's all types of mysticism.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I've always been like drawn into, you know, Celtic mysticism, Native American mysticism, Asian mysticism, the African mysticism. There's like so many different types, but then there's commonalities in all of them.
Exactly.
There's a bunch of things. Multiple cultures found the same idea, and it maybe expressed it a different way, but it's this overall same idea.
So
it's like, oh, that's a universal concept, right? Mm-hmm. So human beings have some universal concepts despite all of our differences. And it's cool to kind of pick up on that.
I think we're also similar in a way. So I think there's definitely more things that connect us than separate us, even though we are so unique, every single person. But there are so many things that, you know, connect us, that make us look, or, you know, that we should kind of feel that, you know, we are one family and we need to keep together. And it's okay to fight sometimes, you know, but like we should also figure out our, you know, our survival, and we cannot, you know, we need to grow this relationship stronger within us. It's like, if you ask about slut, then slut is actually, it's a funny story behind that. I'm not gonna open it now because it's a long and really funny story, but basically, yeah, it explores that kind of world that, you know, when that musicians are actually, and writers and whoever are writing content, and if they're doing this with pure heart, and especially people who are working with words, you know, like normally you pick this, I think most people have just only a couple or one or even none who they are actually opening their deepest, you know, deepest feelings and struggles and their true selves. But it's something that's super private, and in a way artists are opening it to the whole world, and it's a big risk. It's a really, really vulnerable, you know, thing, and it is in a way the same way as like, you know, sluts open something that's
intimate. About, like, in a poetic sense, that's interesting, because, you know, I have an alter ego, you know, really listens to the ghost, like Josephine Electric, right? Josephine Electric, the female version of myself. And she's got this crazy libido, and she's like really out there. She's basically me, like that. I'm just representing her as like another side of me,
right?
I'm not saying that she can be equally as crazy as I can be, right? So I can be. But the whole idea, though, is that she reveals a lot, and I created her so I could reveal things as a guy I wouldn't reveal. So I can go in an emotional place that most men don't go. So I'll put a mask on it and talk about it from a feminine perspective. And then people have thought that, well, she's really aggressive, and she's really out there, and she seems like she's a dominatrix, and she's doing all this stuff. I said, well, you know, those are my feelings. I just expressed it in a different way. I can see what you're saying, because a lot of people have kind of pushed me and said, you know, I'm somebody that could rhyme with the door. You know, it's the same thing. It's like, well, why are you being so like over the top? I think a lot of artists do that. I mean, like Mick Jagger, you know, Prince. I like a lot of guys, Freddie Mercury, when they put themselves out there, they became kind of like, wow, you guys are like really over exaggerated, over the top, over sexed, over this. And it's like, is that character? Is that really you? Or is that part of like how you express yourself?
Yeah, I mean, it's also, you know, like when when people are, you know, a lot of musicians also, a lot of poets, a lot of writers are, you know, shamelessly writing how unhappy they are sometimes, and, you know, how miserable they feel, or, you know, how, you know, all this kind of things that are not perfect about them, you know. But many people just feel that, you know, they need to always like live up to the standard of being like perfect, and they have no faults, and they, you know, they have no struggles, because then, you know, they will be accepted and valued by other people by being this, you know, this kind of person. And so we are really often afraid actually to, you know, to open ourselves, you know, up to anybody. But I think like, yeah, musicians, they are doing this, and I think it's such a, you know, it's such a, like, it's such a thing, you know. But, you know, the funny, that maybe, and so it's kind of like, you know, we are kind of like sluts opening something really intimate up to the whole world.
You know, I think emotionally we're kind of taking off all of our clothes.
Yes, right? Exactly.
We
yeah.
show everybody. We're emotionally in the nude, right? So we're
exactly
showing like everything. And a lot of people like have asked me, like, how could you write such a song telling everybody like all the like this really deep stuff? And I've had fans like question me, you know, send me like notes. And it's like, wow, I'm worried about you. It's like, what, you know, you know, but it's like, okay. I think every artist, I think, you know, even painters and actors, you know, you think about method actor, they get into their role, you know, like you think about Al Pacino or De Niro, or some of the great Harvey Keitel, some of these great Marlon Brando, they would reveal themselves the way it's like really like on a nerved, like to the edge, where they would like you're saying, they, you know, are they having a psychosis? I mean, they just really got so into the character, and the character might be in such a dark place.
They
just have that, you know, he like Heath Ledger when he did the Joker, everybody saw it. It's like very dark. It's like super, super dark. It's like, how could you get to that kind of space? And I think musicians, we can get there like sexually, we can get there with sadness and get there with, you know, depression and melancholy.
Yeah,
anything. You think about like a woman like Karen Carpenter, her voice, it just represents melancholy. Even when she sings a happy Carpenter song, you sense the sadness in her voice. It's just like embedded in how she carried her work out. You know, that's what she did. She was able to do that. She could, she had the innate ability to kind of have her voice represent melancholy. And it does. And that's hard. And I think it was hard on her as an artist to have that kind of space. And I think any artist, when they do that, I mean, it does take part of yourself. And you are showing a lot, a large part of yourself, and then you have to kind of have a way to protect yourself, or maybe you don't. Some artists have kind of gotten themselves in positions where they weren't protected, and they kind of dealt with the consequences.
Yeah, I mean, it is a, you know, it is a lot of. I mean, it's a really valuable job, and also that's kind of, you know, that's kind of always funny that money has been struggling in this industry, even though money in this other industry is not always a struggle. I don't know. I don't know any slut actually who is working for free if it's their job.
You might have some monetary benefit, but the damage that you did to your psyche and to your id and your superego, because of how you carry yourself, is like, I think it's the same kind of damage. Like when you present yourself, like Prince presented himself as this really over the top, like sexual being, right? That was just like, but if you look at his life, he had a lot of sadness, he had a lot of depression, and he didn't make it, right? So, so you're like, okay, he had this one image for the world, and he put all that out there, but he had this other thing. And so he put himself out there as this very romantic fantasy type of thing, but it didn't pan out. You know, he didn't actually end up having a wife. He didn't have kids. He didn't, everything he talked about trying to get, he didn't get. And so that must have been a real pain in his life, that this stuff was like over-exaggerating. He didn't get what he really wanted.
Yeah.
And so I think a lot of artists that will put themselves out, and you could say that he was in that kind of category. He was kind of selling his whole image, was this whole thing. And it's like, and it seemed to hurt him. You know.
Yeah, it you know, you have nothing to, you know, normally people, they don't speak too much because then, you know, then other people know that if they don't achieve something that they wanted, then they have failed, right? Which is totally, you know, so 2000 and 2000. But like, you know, with musicians, I mean, if you're an open, if you're a public character and you know, everybody knows your life, everybody knows what's going on, and then you don't reach what you, you know, what you desired, then you might be a public failure. And, you know, I think like, that's why, you know, every musician need to take care of themselves as well in this point, that, you know, the human inside them. And sometimes when they are not in this musician mode, you know, we are also sometimes humans,
yeah.
You know, so, and kind of like really try to make those two characters, you know, you know, where your musician, you know, there are situations where your musician self really can help you, but, you know, you cannot too much also, you know, rely on it to,
yeah,
to kind of, like, you know,
yeah, because you can't be like your stage self like 100% of the time, because it's sometimes, yeah, it's not, it could be reality, but sometimes it's like hyper reality.
Right? Yeah, I know.
So if you try to live in that zone where you're on stage, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's art. And
yeah, I mean,
you know,
like, if you,
maybe art can't be like that all day.
Yeah, I mean, if you're, you know, imagine you're feeding on writing only depressive songs, and then if you want to create honest art, then you actually should put yourself then in those situations. Then, you know, it's just that kind of stuff. I am not sure about how healthy that is, but, you know.
Like, your biggest hits, like, I heard, like, James Taylor, he's, like, famous for, like, Fire and Rain, Fire, you know, all these, like, kind of depressing love songs, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he was very, very popular when he wasn't happy, right?
Mm-hmm.
He wrote some of his best work when he was, like, on heroin and he was, like, having a lot of problems. Mm-hmm. Then he got married, he got kids, and he got happy. And then the critics hated his work.
Yeah.
When he wrote work, when he was actually happy, happily married, had children, stopped writing depressing songs, stopped writing songs that had some kind of edge to them, and actually were like more happy. And then the fans, yeah, were like, oh, we don't like it. So then the problem is, does your darkness come because, like, that's the only way you can make it? Is if you put yourself in that kind of zone where the fans like your depressive material, and do you actually have to become depressed,
mm-hmm,
to make that material? You know,
I mean, yeah, it's just kind of like, I feel like if a record is your friend, or if a musician, you know, is your friend, let's say in a form of an album, in form of a song, then, you know, if people are happy, then normally they don't have this urge or extreme need of, you know, someone else, like, beside them to kind of make them feel happier, because they are all really happy. But, you know, if you're sad, you know that, like, if you're really sad and you really feel that, oh, I really need a friend, I really need to talk to a friend, I think that's when people also go to music, because music is that friend. Some song is that,
yeah,
that friend who exactly understands what they are going through. And yeah, maybe that's why.
I think that's the problem sometimes, is to create good art, it usually comes from pain, right? Like, artists are kind of keyed in at dealing with emotion. Not every, mm-hmm, emotion is happy, right? So, mm-hmm, a lot of great work comes from emotionally charged, maybe painful things,
mm-hmm, right?
And the fact that a creative person can take that painful thing and turn it into art, which is positive, because they took something that might be negative or might,
yeah,
be something that hurts and made something beautiful. But the problem is, do they have to be in that zone to write that, right? Can they,
yeah,
find a way to write something different and not have to be in that place? And so some,
yeah,
artists get stuck in this zone where, like, they're, the only work that makes them popular or makes them money is when they are not, when they're actually going through something hard or painful,
yeah,
and able to write it. And then do they seek that out because that's the only thing the public wants?
Yeah, I mean, the fear of happiness, right? The fear of happiness. I think that's what not only artists, but I think that's what many people also feel like, that they feel that if they're happy, then their growth stops. But, you know, it's exactly the same flower thing, that, you know, it's that you have reached the happiness. This doesn't mean that the world stops. It means that, you know, the real work just starts then.
You're never happy for like any super long length of time. I think happiness is like, it's like a flower. It's like a point, right? When something's beautiful, it doesn't last forever.
Yeah, but there's little motivation to water it. Like,
yeah, I think the way the world is like that beautiful things tend to be very finite in their time existence. Mm-hmm. Even though they should be longer, and there are examples of things that last longer, but it tends to be kind of like little periods
where
in an end, and then, you know, something else happens and you grow because of the things that happen, you know.
I think
you have to go through things in life. Like, you went through 8 years to build your album. It must have been points where that were like feeling positive, and points where you didn't feel so positive.
Totally. You know, it's just, it has been like, you know, it has been all the struggles, I think, that kind of a human being can, you know, can go and wanting to make its way to the world. And in the end, you know, and wanting to maybe looking for a place and looking for people who might want to listen to it, you know, as an album, as a whole, not like, not separate songs, because, you know, the what I have seen is, you know, people still, especially nowadays, I think all the genre and playlist, we have like a lot of classification after the genres, and then there are people who like pop music, there are people who like ambient music, there are people who like experimental music, and, you know, and if they an experimental music fan decides to, for example, discovers Landed for Mars, like, and is in love with it, and then listen to the rest of the songs and they're more pop, or, you know, and might totally like not feel connection at all. But, you know, it's just the what interests me and what I find interesting, it's that I believe that, you know, it's about the journey itself, that, you know, like at some point, like where is the point that you can actually get beyond the songs and start actually wonder that, okay, so, but what connects those songs? Like, what connects, like, it's all a journey and it's different stages of the journey. And how can I maybe like actually develop my own understanding of music, like beyond what I was before? It's kind of like growing, you know, it gives you something new.
I think that's why I like about like the concept album, and what I like about your album is that it brings me back, because I'm a child of the 70s, right? So every time we listened to music, it was on vinyl. And the one good thing about vinyl is a record like yours, if it was released in 1972, people would listen to the whole thing, right?
That's
the nature of the way vinyl is. So when we used to buy a vinyl record, we put it down, we listened to the whole side. You know, if it wasn't something we wanted, we might not listen to the second side. But a lot of times we would turn it over and listen to the whole thing. And I think, like, today, you know, like art, the way you're making art, it doesn't really fit the playlist structure, because the playlist structure is not really designed to handle something like your record. I think your record is more like, you know, Bandcamp, you know, vinyl, limited CD release with a, you know, like a special release, like with videos and stuff. To kind of, I would think that the videos that you have for this project are probably going to draw people into understanding that this is not just a one song on a playlist.
It's not a
full concept album, like a Pink Floyd album. Like you know, like a great, like, statement from the past, from, like, you know, a band like one of my favorite bands, like The Who, did multiple rock operas, like Tommy and Quadrophenia.
Oh yeah.
If you listen to Tommy, you can't just listen to Pinball Wizard. you have to listen to the whole thing. And it's like, almost an hour and a half. You know, like, and it's a big concept. And people, even back in the 60s, they were like, oh, you can't do that. No one's going to sit down and listen for like an hour and a half to a record. But they did. People went to see Tommy like in these big theaters because it, like, they would do every song from the album and play it through like a play and kind of run it like a play, because that's what it is. And I think I'm a big fan of that. I listen to tons of records like that. Even today, I find bands that do that. I go looking for bands that still do that. So you're one in that list of bands, you know, of artists that do that. So I think people who understand that tradition and music and like it should listen to your album, Universe. I think it's something that I think people should, if they want to have an experience, they just don't want to hear one song. They want to hear like a whole thing. Put your headphones on.
Yeah, put your headphones on, disappear, be ready to disappear in this reality.
Put your phone down, put the headphones on,
and close your eyes.
Just think about the record. I'm positive. I'm really happy that you came on the program. But I want everybody to come there and go out to PosiMist.com, go out to the Bandcamp link that we got, and check this record out, because it's phenomenal. And I think that people, I hope other artists get inspired by what you did and do more work like this, because this is great to listen to.
Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
We're gonna have our concert that you're part of in July. So I'm looking forward to
it. I'm really excited. Really excited to play.
Yeah, we'll talk more about that offline. But on the 16th to the 18th, we're doing the PEG Bedroom Producer Festival on this channel, my Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook channel. So far, we got 22 bands or artists that we've talked to since 2018. And that's pretty good. We've talked to over like 70 people. We got 22 of them to decide to do it. So you're one of them. So thank you very much. And we'll be talking to you again. We'll be seeing from everybody. We'll see her PosiMist again as part of that performance on the 16th through the 18th.
Thank you. Take care, people. Thank you.